the defining characteristic of my father in heaven, I think it ought to be my defining characteristic as a dad here on earth. And so I think prioritizing that creates a mental shift, because in order to do that, this is where I think the listening thing comes in. You know, I might expand listening to be just paying attention. What fascinates me is in Peter's epistle, we're instructed to cast our cares on him because he cares for us. And so what that tells me is that God's care of me is in a sense tailor-made, that he wants to know what my problems are, that he wants to know what my struggles are. He wants to know my thoughts and what I'm dealing with so that he can care for me in the way that I need to be cared for. And I think this is a good model and template for us as dads. We have to listen to our kids and pay attention to our kids so that we actually know their needs. This is why I'm very anti and against the advice of be the dad that you wish that you had.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Today, we're with Anthony Vandegrift. He is the father of four and the founder and host of Fathering Our Future. He loves being a dad. He considers it a privilege, and he wants to help other dads enjoy fatherhood also. Hey, Anthony, how's it going?
Hey, it's going really good. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to this.
Me too. I know we talked before this. You're a tired man with a young family. Tell me a little about your current fatherhood situation.
So current situation is I have four kids, 8, 6, 4, and 10 months. Early on, I still sleep really, really hard. But early on with the first three kids, I did not have huge involvement at night. But for whatever reason, things have changed with number four. So I'm up. It's lessened a little bit here recently. But for a while there, it was up at 11 to feed, up again at 2 to feed, up at 3 because she just happened to wake up, and then up at 5. And it was typically I'm up for the day at that point. So That was several weeks consecutively. That was a challenge. I just got back from a trip with my son, so I got to rest and reset and recoup. But I guess she quickly wanted to get me back to that old routine. So, you know, I was up at midnight and then 2 and then 5 again, my first night back. And then last night was the first night that she woke up only once to eat. And that was kind of refreshing, but still tough, still trying to recoup from the previous night. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Honestly, having the four kids, it's really not all that bad. I actually really enjoy it. And the other day I sat and looked at my wife who had all four kids on the couch with her. And I thought, man, I could throw another one into the mix like this. So this is totally doable. Why stop now? Probably not going to happen, but no, I absolutely love it. I just really love sleep too. So that's definitely been the hardest part with baby number four. But once we get out of the sleepless nights, then it's just the diaper stage. And after that, we're off to the races and it's a whole lot of fun.
That's great. Has it given you an additional level of, I don't know, sympathy for the mothers who have stayed up in the night nursing and taking care of babies?
For sure. So my wife nursed the first three kids for at least a year, and she planned to do it again with baby number four, except baby number four was more of a challenge, just wasn't eating. And when we switched her over to a bottle and formula, it was just like, this is what I want. So she took off. There was no, I don't want to breastfeed again. That didn't happen. So my wife just accepted that and we rolled with it, which is why I've had more of an involvement at night. Oh, to the dads out there.
You do have the goods.
Exactly. I do have the goods. So like to the dads out there, be all in favor for breastfeeding. You definitely want to do that. Not just for the benefits that the kid receives, but also for your privilege of sleeping. But yeah, no, definitely have a lot more sympathy for the moms who are up all the time, constantly throughout the night. It is exhausting. So count yourself lucky if you don't have to breastfeed because you're a dad. But if you do have to wake up and do the whole bottle routine, there are some pieces of equipment that I would highly recommend that make that a whole lot easier. My wife, I don't know what it's called, but it's basically like an espresso machine, but for baby formula. And you just go push a button and there it is. That's a game changer, especially when it's 2 a.m. and you don't know who you are. That comes in very handy. So anyway, but I definitely feel for the moms who do this all the time. Just another proof that they're probably a lot stronger than we are.
Yeah. I've often said to myself, I don't know how my wife is actually still alive. So, you know, that shows us that there is a God because he sustains us through those things.
Exactly.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your own upbringing? What was your father like and what are some of the most impactful memories you have from your upbringing?
Well, I love my dad. My dad stuck around. My dad was there. In hindsight, looking back at everything from where I'm at today, I have a lot more grace from my father. My dad did not have a dad growing up, and so there's a lot of things that I do not hold against him. I don't feel like I have a ton of memories. My dad worked all the time, but this is because my dad grew up very, very poor. He had a single mom, and he was one of five children, but she essentially adopted a sixth. So he was the youngest and had to get to work at a very young age. He's got stories of his mother making large batches of peanut brittle, filling up boxes, and then he being 3 and 4 years old, being dropped off somewhere in town, walking around trying to sell his box of peanut brittle. And that's how they had food for anything. So he got all the hand-me-downs. And I know he worked the way that he worked because he grew up without anything. So, you know, being a little older and a little wiser now, I look back and I realize, well, that's probably why he worked as hard as he worked. And he did a lot of things and provided in a lot of really big ways. We weren't wealthy, but I never went without, even though I remember there were times that he definitely went without so that I didn't have to. And little things like that.
Do you remember one of those times that you can tell us about?
Yeah, I don't know that I remember the exact time. I just remember that there was a particular evening that it was time for dinner, and he and my mom were scrounging around in the kitchen trying to find something, and they found a little bit, and they prepared food for me and for my little sister, and they didn't eat. So there were definitely times that I saw my dad not have dinner. My dad put himself through some really difficult seasons of life just so he could provide. One of those in particular, we grew up in a very small town in Southeast Texas called Orange. And when I turned 16, the family relocated up here to the Dallas area. And my dad was a general contractor. Well, my dad moved to a new place. Now he had no leads. He had no customers. He had to start all over again with his business. And that took time. And so he ended up trying to put his efforts toward that during the day. And at night, he worked the graveyard shift at Sam's. So my dad survived on 3 to 4 hours of sleep every day for at least a year, just so he could have benefits, some sort of a consistent pay, while also trying to get his own business off the ground. And at the home, while that's happening, I view that as, well, dad's just never around. Dad's always working. But now I look back on it and I realize he was trying to maintain the stay-at-home mom position that my mother held so that she didn't have to go and do anything else. And he was trying to take care of us because he grew up without a dad who took care of him. So like, I understand his motivations now, being older myself and being a father. So I don't have a lot of one-on-one instances with my dad. I remember when I was young enough to go to work with him when we were in Orange, I went with him all the time. He loved ZZ Top. We listened to ZZ Top and Def Leppard all the time. I remember these little fun moments of I was with my dad, he took me to work with him, and he trusted me enough to do particular things. I got to ride the lawnmower, and he let me help him cut grass, and he let me drive the truck with the trailer when I was, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, and back it up through all of these ridiculous yards with pine trees everywhere. Even though occasionally I'd hit one, it'd freak out, but then we'd pull forward and fix it again. So I have more moments when I was younger with my father. So I appreciate him being there, and I appreciate the times that I've got with him. And I see now probably where his heart was, but where he felt he probably couldn't be with me, with how he treats my oldest, my son. He takes him fishing almost on a weekly basis. He is very intentional about spending time with him. When my son stays the night with my parents, he takes him to work with him in the same way he took me to work with him. So I know my dad has a tremendous heart, and I think he found himself in a place where it was, I have to put food on the table and clothes on their back and a roof over their head. And he wrestled with how to prioritize time in that way. And I don't know that I could say, well, he could have done better doing this. So again, to recap, growing up, it felt like he wasn't there a lot. And I don't have a lot of memories beyond a certain point, but I know his heart was in the right place. And I know he cared. I'll tell a story that didn't happen when I was growing up, but gave me greater respect for my dad and helped me see something about fatherhood. So when COVID hit, I believe this started in 2020, at the end of 2020, maybe the beginning of 2021. At some point, I got COVID, and I got, I believe they called it the Delta variant. And that nearly killed me. I lost 20 pounds in 11 days, and it was pretty much all muscle. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't move. It was bittersweet that my wife and kids, three kids at the time, were in Ohio visiting her family so that they were not there to get exposed to me. But I remember my dad had COVID at the same time. And I'm pretty certain he's the one who gave me COVID because he's too tough to admit that he's sick. But as he was coming off of it and I was still in the heat of it, he would drive over to my house, even when he wasn't feeling good. He ended up taking me to see the doctor so that I can get the infusion that they were still giving at that time so that I could get better. He dropped me back off of the house. He said, if you need anything, let me know. And I thought I was going to get better because everyone said 7 to 10 days and it's done. Well, day 8, I was on the verge of death is what it felt like. That's when I got the infusion. I thought I would be better when I got home. And I called my dad at 2 a.m. and I'm like, I need you to come get me in the morning. Well, he didn't wait till the morning. He came right away and he helped me get to the truck. He took me to his house and I stayed there for the next 3 or 4 days until I felt better. I remember at one point when I thought I could try to eat again, my mom made some eggs and my dad sat in the room next to me. I was laying down in the bed. He sat there for probably 45 minutes to an hour, still not feeling great himself, holding a plate of eggs with a fork until I thought I had the strength to eat. And he finally said, why don't you just tell me when you think you can do it? But I mean, he was so patient. And so my big takeaway from that was you're always a dad, that being a dad doesn't end when your kids are out of the house. You might not be needed in the same capacity that you're needed while they're young and dependent upon you. But my dad clearly showed me that even though I was away from his care and I had a family of my own and a home of my own, and I was doing my own life, when the moment presented itself for him to step up and be dad again in the way that he needed to be, he did it. And that spoke volumes to me and really helped shape my perspective on my identity as a father, that this is not about what I do, but it's about who I am. And perpetually, I will be a dad. I might not need to change diapers and I might not need to be there every single day to lend a shoulder for a kid to cry on or to hug them, but the moments will still arise. And when they do, I have the opportunity and the privilege of still stepping in. So I guess that's the upbringing for me, and that's how I was shaped. Some of the shaping came after the fact, but still, I realized that my dad does love me and that he did what he thought was best based on how he grew up. And I think that's the case for all of us. We do what we saw. We do what maybe we thought should have been done, but it's all contingent upon our experience. So I do consider myself one of the blessed guys to say I had good parents, parents who cared, parents who loved me, parents who worked and fought really hard to take care of me. So I guess that's the summary of that perspective that I've got.
That's special that you have that. So your family right now, you're doing some things in your family to be intentional with them, with your 4 children. How old's the oldest?
8.
8. So 8 down to 10 months. Very good. That's a pretty wide range. One of the things we talked about before we jumped on this call was that you feel like it's important to prioritize listening and loving. Can you describe that in a little bit more detail?
Sure. I'll start first with the love part. I don't think that this is the thing that comes natural to dads. I think we want to be tough. And when we think about love, it's always tough love. We have this idea that we have to be stoic and strong and represent masculinity in a very macho way. So the love thing for me comes from how I read the scriptures. I think about God and all of the attributes that are given to God in the Bible. And there's plenty that you can choose from, but he's holy, he's strong, he's all of these things. But what fascinates me is that when John is writing his epistle in 1 John chapter 4, even though he could pull from different qualities and attributes of God to justify the reasons why he's telling the people to do what they ought to do, instead of saying, do it because God's powerful and he will squash you, do it because God is holy and so you're supposed to do the same thing, he writes multiple times, God is love. And not even that God loves you a lot, but that God is love, that if in some sense, he's an embodiment of love. If you think of love, you've got to think of God. If you think of God, you've got to think of love. They're inseparable. And so for me, if that is the defining characteristic of my Father in heaven, I think it ought to be my defining characteristic as a dad here on earth. And so I think prioritizing that creates a mental shift, because in order to do that, this is where I think the listening thing comes in. And, you know, I might expand listening to be just paying attention. What fascinates me is in Peter's epistle, we're instructed to cast our cares on him because he cares for us. And so what that tells me is that God's care of me is, in a sense, tailor-made. That he wants to know what my problems are, that he wants to know what my struggles are. He wants to know my thoughts and what I'm dealing with so that he can care for me in the way that I need to be cared for. And I think this is a good model and template for us as dads. We have to listen to our kids and pay attention to our kids so that we actually know their needs. This is why I'm very anti and against the advice of be the dad that you wish that you had. Because I think when men strive to do that, while it is noble in a sense, what we end up doing is we try to become what we wish we had. And what we're neglecting is what our children are actually asking for, because we're so fixated on my dad wasn't this, this, and this. So I'm going to be these things. But maybe your wife provides some of these things that you didn't get from your dad, and maybe what your kids need, because let's face it, they're growing up in a different time and a different culture. And just because you've been there, done that, and have the t-shirt doesn't mean that it still fits. So things change and you have to continually learn. And if you're not open to the fact that my kids are going to need different things than I needed, you're going to end up ultimately doing something that's selfish, even though it's intended to be good. So this is where, again, the listening comes in. Communication is a huge part in establishing trust, which is the bedrock of relationship. And it's a huge part in nurturing that continually. But in the same way that we often probably like to tell our kids, you have two ears and one mouth for a reason, you should listen twice as much as you talk. I think the rule still applies to us as dads, because I think what we say to our kids is predicated on what we hear from them. Again, what are you actually dealing with? What are we observing about their behavior? If we just jump in and we react instead of taking the time to listen and to respond, I think ultimately we end up serving ourselves and not our kids. So, you know, for example, this is a very ongoing thing with my now 4-year-old and has been for the last year and a half or so. She throws her tantrums. And when she throws her tantrums, they're not logic based. So I can't respond with logic. I can't say this makes absolutely no sense. And here's my 3 reasons why. And here's my defenses of each of these 3 reasons. Now stop. Doesn't work with a 4-year-old. You can try it all you want, but you're never going to win. So what I have to do is I have to actually listen. And I have to ask questions based on what I hear. So if she's losing it, simple question might be, what's wrong? And she might say something like, I can't walk. To which I can respond, well, you're standing up and you're moving right now. So I don't think that's really the problem. And then she'll say something like, well, I'm hungry. And I'll tell her, you just ate 30 minutes ago and I just gave you a snack. There's no way you're still hungry. And eventually we'll go through this line of questioning. And almost without fail, she gets to the same place every tantrum. And her last thing that she says is, I just need a hug. And so now I know how to respond. Rather than saying, I'm going to give you something to cry about, or if you don't stop, I'm going to spank you, or I'm going to banish you to your room and so that you don't disturb anyone else. Instead of doing things that serve myself and my convenience, I'm patient and I listen and I respond to the information that I receive so that I actually know what to respond to. And it almost always boils down to, I just need a hug. And so then I can actually provide what's needed. And then we have resolution. And so that's where I think the listening thing comes in. And that obviously takes a different shape as your kids grow up. But still, just that practice of patience and listening and really allowing your kid to cast their present care on you so that you can care for them in the way that they actually need. And again, I think this becomes cyclical with love. As you're doing those things, what your kids observe and what gets down into their heart is that my dad cares for me the way that I need to be cared for. And that will be interpreted as my dad loves me. And I think at the end of everything that we're doing, all the other accomplishments that we want to pursue and chase in life, great. I hope we get them. I pray for every guy that they're successful in every way that they want to be successful. But when we take that last breath and everyone comes from far and wide and they talk about the accolades and accomplishments, my prayer is that my kids get up there and say, yeah, if there ever was the man, it was my dad. But more than anything, I know that he loved me. That is what I think all of us as fathers ought to truly desire and seek after. So that's why for me, love and listening are 2 things that maybe are a bit out of the norm, especially for men, because we don't always like to tap into the sensitive side, the affectionate side. And I struggle with this. Classic example, I just got off of this boys' cruise with my son, which, you know, was a lot of fun. And if you want more details, I can give you more details on it. But my son is 8. And my son is a big 8-year-old. He looks more like a 10-year-old. He's very tall. And my son is affectionate. I'm totally okay with my arm around him. We've given him a hug. I still kiss him on the cheek. I'm totally fine with that. And I'll be fine with that forever. But for whatever reason, I get this weird feeling every time he grabs my hand, because he still likes to hold my hand. And he did it multiple times on the cruise ship. Anytime he was walking beside me, he goes to grab my hand. And I have to fight this feeling inside that says he's too big for this. because then I challenged myself, well, why do I think that? Now, my dad was not overly affectionate. My dad was a tough guy. My dad had gallstones in his gallbladder and it needed to be removed and his eyes were yellow and he was like, no, I'm fine. My mom had to force him to go to the hospital. My dad had a stroke. My dad had a stroke a few years back while my mom was decorating the Christmas tree. And she turned around and she laughed at first because she thought he was playing because he never gets sick. He's impervious to anything. That's what it's always seemed like. And he had worked that day. And she was like, I'm going to call an ambulance. And in his own way that he could, he communicated, no, take me to the hospital if you feel you need to. But first, I'm going to shower. And he literally, while having a stroke, went and took a shower, changed his clothes, and then allowed her to take him to the hospital. It's just like, you do realize that you could have died at any point in doing this. But he's just been the most macho man, and he's the strongest guy ever. He's just done all these weird feats, and it's just like he's got to be the modern-day Samson. He's a big guy, but his strength is just ridiculous. So I didn't have the affectionate father. I've made it a point, like, I want to be this way with my kids. I saw an older dad, probably in his 70s, 80s, walk up to his son in his 50s, hugging, kiss him on the cheek, right in this circle of men. Didn't think about it, and I thought, this is how I want to be with my kid. I don't want to care what people think. I just want to love my son. But still, I fight that. I fight that when he goes to hold my hand, because then I'm just like, this feels childish, but is this what he needs? And so even though I'm passing out this philosophy of love, it's still something that I have to fight because of my upbringing personally. Anyway, that's what I try to focus on, because I don't think, at least for me, the listening part, it's easy to serve self and just correct things in the moment. Men, we're Mr. Fix-It. We want to just get resolution and we want to get it right away. Listening is counterintuitive to that. And then the tough, macho, tough love persona that we all have, or most of us have as men, likely, it's not a natural thing to be affectionate. It's not a natural thing to love in a way that our kids need to be loved. It's definitely, for me, not a natural thing to still hold my 8-year-old son's hand. Mm-hmm. It would be different for a daughter, but at some point I feel like, well, he's got to become a man. And so he can't do these things. He can't need affection this way. And so I think that's an idea that I'm trying to still unravel in my head right now.
No, that's so true. I think I would say similarly, I think there's a distance between myself and my dad for a long time. And I have a 10-year-old daughter and she still likes to hold my hand. And it sometimes feels weird if I'm walking into a grocery store and she grabs my hand and holds it as we're walking in. I didn't grow up like that. I didn't grow up wanting to hold my mom's hand or my dad's hand. And so I find it certainly is something that comes to mind when she does it. I'm thinking about it as we're walking in. And I'm also thinking about our culture is so overly sexualized also. Sure. Like, all those things come to mind, like, you know, what do people think or stuff like that. And I think that's an unfortunate consequence of the over-sexualization of our culture. But I think those are awesome. The listening and loving, and I think you're right on with the how those intertwine together. Have you ever read the autobiography of John Patton? He was a missionary to Vanuatu. So there's a small section in this autobiography, and he recalls a memory of his dad when he was about to go to seminary. So he's in his 20s and he's going to go to seminary in Glasgow. This is in Britain. And it's 40 miles from his house to the train station. And his dad walks with him for the first 6 miles. And they're walking together in almost complete silence. And he recalls his dad mouthing silently prayers while they're walking. And they get to this appointed place where they're going to part. And his dad holds his hand and they wait in silence. And then his dad says something like, God bless you, my son. May your father's God keep you from all evil. And they tear up, they cry, they hug, they part ways. He runs off down this path. And as he's about to turn the corner, he looks back to see if his dad is still there. And his dad is standing there still with his hat in his hand, just watching his son leave. And so he ducks behind this corner and he weeps. And he cries, and a few minutes pass, and he's curious if his dad is still there. So he looks up over the edge to see if his dad's there, and his dad does not see him. But his dad climbs up onto this wall to see if he can see his son. He's looking out in the distance to see if he can see him. And when he doesn't see him, he gets back down off the wall, turns around, and starts to walk home. And John, in his autobiography, says, I imagine he's still mouthing silent prayers as he walks back home. And then he goes on to say something along the lines of, I want to live my life in such a way, and that this memory came back to him at very timely moments in his life, almost like a guardian angel. The image of his dad rose before him and kept him from all kinds of prevailing sins. And he said that he never wanted to dishonor or disrespect the mother and father that God had given him. And there's something in that memory that is so honoring to his dad. And he doesn't even have to say, I knew my dad loved me. It's obvious from what he writes.
Right.
I know my dad loved me and cared for me and wanted what's best for me and was going to miss me and was proud of me and thankful and prayed to God for me and all those kinds of things. And it's a short segment in his autobiography, but it's a really wonderful little read.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Yeah. So that harkens back to that love, communicating that love and the physical affection, and even this idea of being patient and listening. The man who can stand silently with his son and say one sentence prayer.
Right. Yeah.
That's a man who's got a meditative mindset about who's really in charge of all this, and it's not him.
Yeah. And one of the things that I attach to this with the loving component, at least biblically, that is theologically, is I think it takes greater strength to be that way than it does to just be the way that we want to instinctively be as men and be tough. I think we see this depicted really clearly for us in Revelation chapter 5. John, as he crafts Revelation, he uses this particular approach a few times where he references that I heard something, but then he turns and he looks and then he sees what he was really hearing spoken about. And in one of those instances in chapter 5 is he hears someone declare that the Lion of the tribe of Judah has come. So then you have this Old Testament figure of power and strength, some sort of, redeeming warrior, if you will, is approaching. But when he turns and he looks, he sees a lamb that looked like it had been slain. And for me, the way that I interpret that, at least for this context, is that it probably takes the strength of the lion to do what the lamb would do. And when we look at what God did for us in Christ, the hardest thing was to take the cross. The hardest thing was to die and give himself up while we were still sinners. And there's no guarantee and no promise that we ever even accept, acknowledge, appreciate what he does, but he does it anyway. So some of the things that you've talked about, it's still awkward. You still fight this even with your 10-year-old daughter. I still fight this with my 8-year-old son. And there's probably other tendencies and things that come up from time to time where it's just like, loving this way is just kind of a challenge. But when I read that about Jesus, I'm reminded that love requires greater strength. So, for the macho men out there who want to be the strongest amongst everybody else, your strength will often be seen in your sacrifice and how much you're willing to actually give of yourself. I just wanted to tag that on.
No,
I think often it's that strength of the lion that takes the strength of the lion to love like the lamb. And that's something that's kind of resonated with me, knowing that, this isn't easy, but it does take true strength to actually truly love my kids the way that I'm supposed to.
It takes the strength of the lion to defeat the power of one's self, how natural that is for us to think about ourselves first instead of steward what God's given us.
Exactly.
Okay, let's jump into isolation as for dads. Let's talk a little bit about dads not connecting with one another. We're connecting. Hey, yeah. Praise God. Here we are. But I know this is, even for me, I find these conversations very helpful. But what do you think is the limit, the obstacle for men to connect with one another? Is it that same sort of emotional connection that men are avoiding? What do you think about that?
I think that's what it is. I think it is the Lone Ranger mentality of, I can do this, so I don't need anyone else to help me. I think some of it may be influenced by our upbringing. So again, with my father, my dad was tough. My dad did not cry and never really saw my dad. My dad never went out with a buddy. I never saw this happen. I remember going over with my sister and my parents to other couples' house from time to time, but it didn't happen a lot. I never knew that my dad had a friend growing up. And so my dad was just tough. Again, there's just certain physical feats that I remember, and I just kind of laugh at thinking, I have no idea how he was able to pull that off. I remember vividly my grandmother's funeral, my father's mom, and this was the only time growing up that I saw his eyes water, and he held his head up so that tears would not fall. And I thought, if he doesn't cry at his mom's funeral, crying is just not acceptable. And so for me, I'm thinking this emotional, lovey-dovey, affectionate side needs to go away. I remember being a little bit of a sensitive kid and crying about certain things. But when I saw my dad do that, I thought, okay, men don't cry. Boys don't cry. This is not okay. And then I became a dad, and I cry all the time because It just comes with the territory, I guess. Maybe I've just backed up on emotions. Anyway, I saw this from my dad. I saw this very macho approach, and my dad just did everything, even with his business. My dad rarely ever hired people to help him. He just did it himself. And so for me, that was definitely a part of it. It was just friends were not a normal thing for a man. Now, fortunately for me, much of my shaping, I think, came from church involvement, which I think was a blessing for me. So I was involved in a program called Bible Quizzing, and that allowed me to travel with my church and be super connected with the family that was involved with it at our church. But I made friends all over the nation with around the same time the start of social media coming in. There was an old platform called Everyone's Connected, and then I never did the Zynga or the MySpace stuff. But Facebook came up eventually, and you know, so at this point, it was easier to stay connected with friends and follow up with people and have conversations. So for me, I did not struggle with friendships. It almost came natural to me. And I'm more of an extrovert. So
do you feel like even now, do you have close friends that you connect with on your deepest issues?
Yes. And I think maybe doing the fatherhood thing has made that, it's made it to where I've been more aggressive about it, if I could phrase it that way. I had friends that I was close to that I never lost contact with. But now, for example, I have one buddy that I text every single Monday. He's on his mission, his entrepreneurial mission, and I'm on this mission with fathering our future, and we tag him with each other every Monday. We ask the hard questions, we see what we're doing, we see what we can help with, and we just stay in constant contact, and that's our minimum. And then I have other friends that I see at church every single week. I come up to our church to do podcast things, and I see buddies, and I see men, and I connect with them when I come in contact with them. And then another thing that I think is also important that is attached to this community idea is not just having men that you can connect with, but having families that you and your wife and your kids can connect with. Because yes, we need community and we need relationships, but so do our wives and so do our kids. So having families that you can come together with, and we're blessed to have at least a couple of families that I can think of off the top of my head where we can get together and we can have fun and we can talk about issues. We can vacation with them. And, you know, some of the families, it's not families that I would have ever thought that I would have connected with, but you find some common ground. Maybe it's the kids connect. And then so you're like, well, maybe we can connect with the parents. Maybe it's the wives connect. And then so you take that bold step and you introduce yourself to her husband, and then you try to talk about whatever you can talk about. It doesn't always happen organically or naturally. Sometimes it takes an effort. And I think most of the time that is the case. But it's an effort that's worth taking, because this whole idea that we can just do it by ourselves is just flawed. And I don't think there's any sweeter way to say that. It's just absolutely wrong. We weren't created to be isolated. We weren't created to do things alone. Biblically, this is very blatant. Even in the beginning, there's an old saying that goes around in church circles that me and God is a majority. And maybe in some contexts, that's okay. But by and large, I think kind of a dumb thing that we say, because in the beginning, God has created Adam, and Adam has the animals, and Adam even has God that he has a relationship with. And God looks at this and he says, it's not good that man is alone. And so God, even being a part of that equation, still views this as loneliness and that this is not adequate. And I think one of the best illustrations of this is the prophet Elijah. He's got this ridiculous resume of all the things that God used him for. He makes a spectacle of the prophets of Baal. And then after this, he catches wind that Jezebel is out to kill him. So all this time, he has a servant that travels with him. And after he gets word of what Jezebel is set out to do, he travels to a particular place and he leaves his servant there. The Bible is very intentional in the language that he leaves his servant there, and then he makes a day's journey out into the wilderness. So he isolates himself, and it's when he's isolated and alone that he prays the prayer of, God, just take me now. I can't do this. This isn't going to work out. It's just better that I'm dead, gone. Just go ahead and end things for me now, please. And, you know, God kicks some sense into him. And he's just like, I've got hundreds of other people just like you who aren't running away and isolating themselves like you're doing right now. But what's beautiful for me is that when he comes back around, God tells him to go and select Elisha to be his servant. And that works out. But at the end of Elijah's life, when he's getting ready to be caught up in this chariot of fire, he tries to leave Elisha behind like three different times. He says, you stay here and let me go. And every time Elisha says, I will not let you go. I will not let you do this alone. And he sticks with him. And I think part of that maybe speaks to Elisha realizing the proclivity of Elijah of isolating himself when things get too difficult and being the friend that says, I'm going to stick with you through this because you're not made to do this alone. And so, you know, I think there's a couple of things that we take from that. One, if you're having awful thoughts and you're just constantly downing yourself, it's probably because you've disconnected from everyone and you have no one that you're in community with. So fix that and find community. But flip that on the other side, we need to try and be more like Elisha. We need to be intentional about connecting with our friends. If it's been a year, two, or three, now is the best time to make that call or send that text and say, hey, man, it's been a while. How have you been doing? Because we all need community. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's probably this macho mindset that we have that, you know, who knows where it really came from. I definitely get clips of it from my upbringing and then just observing other men and maybe culture and TV and movies kind of paint this picture as well. And that's where a lot of it comes from. But I think we've probably learned at this point, at least we should have, that movies and TV is probably not the right inspiration to draw from on how we arrange and orient our lives. Yeah. It's probably not the right way to go. Maybe a biblical approach would be a little smarter, but I think a lot of those influences probably play in for every man, and maybe it's a different combination of factors, but I definitely see those things having their part in this. I don't need anybody to help me do it, but the opposite is the clear truth. We absolutely need people. And honestly, I'm in the camp, the merrier. The more connections you have, the more friends that you stay in contact with. Even through doing this podcast, I've met some really cool dads. They might not be doing super cool things, but they're just cool dads in general. And I make a note and I save their contact information. And once a quarter, I try to email or send them a text and just check in with them because I know they need it. And I know it helps me when I do that because then they always reciprocate it. They ask, well, how are you doing? And so it just gives me this constant place of I'm not alone. And sometimes that mindset is enough to help us continue on this journey that we call fatherhood.
Man, that's so good. Those are some good insights. I definitely share a similar experience with my dad not crying very often and somehow learning that growing up. And what my hope for myself, I've certainly cried more as a father, and you're 100% right on that. But my hope on that is that I don't think any man wants to be like emotions being out of control, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, in fact, the opposite, being able to see our emotions and face them with both eyes and to stare into someone else's eyes while I experience an emotion of sadness or joy and be okay with that, not feel some kind of embarrassment that I feel a certain way about something or that I have an emotion that's powerful enough to bring a tear to my eye, but that I could stare at that emotion. And I think in the Christian sense, I can stare at that emotion knowing that God is with me and that he knows what's best for me, even if the situation is difficult. Or I went on our anniversary date a couple of weeks back and my wife and I were talking about just how many, we've been married for 18 years. And I made the comment that it was 2 years before that I had asked her for her number. And so it was almost 20 years to the date that I asked her, hey, can I get your phone number? I started tearing up and I was like, not quite sure why, you know? And my wife said, you know, why are you crying? I said, I don't know. I'm sad. And I'm happy at the same time. She said, why are you happy? I said, just because I'm married and time goes so fast. Boom. 20 years feels like yesterday. And she said, why are you sad? I said, because there's not going to be marriage in heaven. And, or at least not as far as we know, Jesus says there won't be anyone being given or being taken to marriage. And the idea that there'll be an end to this relationship that feels so special, maybe not a complete end, but an end in the earthly enjoyment of it.
Sure.
So I don't do that often because I feel embarrassment about crying in front of others. And, you know, I want to be in control of myself. And I think that's good and right to have our minds be in control of our emotions and our bodies. And I think men are good at that, particularly good at that.
Too good.
Yeah, that's right. We're too good at it. We're so good at it that we can run into blazing fires and stuff those emotions down and be unafraid, or be afraid but not let it prevent us. Or we can have the capacity to do things that may debilitate some others, children and some females. And so there's something special about that as well, but I think it needs to be appropriately balanced with our whole person, you know, the whole of who God made us to be.
For sure. Yeah. And God gave us the emotions too. And I think that's what men often neglect to realize is your ability to emote is a part of God's design. So, and oftentimes when you bottle it all up and you try to stifle it, it will manifest itself in a different way. It typically will not manifest itself in a way that is helpful for other people.
A healthy way.
Exactly. I think for men, a lot of times it ends up coming back out as anger and frustration. Because why are you pushing? Why do you want to know? Why are you asking this? And it just stop trying to get me to be emotional because this is wrong. And so we protect against that. And instead of just opening up and being vulnerable with the ones that we love most and that love us the most, we end up snapping at them and doing damage instead of good. Yeah. So if anyone's out there and they're afraid to cry, even if you do it alone, just do it. Like there have been times, one time I'll never forget. The last house that we were in, we had a huge hallway. We had pictures of the kids on the wall. And I just remember I was locking all the doors before bed and turning all the lights. And on my way back, I passed this hall and I stopped and looked at the pictures of our kids. And I just stood there and wept. Mm. I wept for like 5 minutes. But I dried it all up before I got back to the bedroom and I was fine. You know, my wife couldn't tell that I was crying if she was even awake at that point. I don't remember. But even if it's alone, maybe that's how you start. Maybe you do it in private first, but can't be afraid to let it out.
Good. All right. Last question for you. What has been your, as a dad?
Greatest accomplishment.
Or what are you most proud of as a dad?
I struggle with this. So on my podcast, I always ask dads, what's your best piece of advice? And it wasn't up until recently, I actually asked myself, do I even have an answer for that question? And I realized, man, this is a loaded question because you really have to, you either have to set something up above the rest or you have to water everything down to give just some generic answer that's all encompassing. And that's difficult. So to pick the greatest accomplishment and to pick maybe something that I'm most proud of. It's tough because, you know, the fact that I have stuck around, that I'm there for my kids, I'm proud that I've done that. The fact that I'm patient with my kids, I'm proud that I've done that. The fact that I've grown in various ways to where I'm not viewing this thing that I do called fatherhood as, am I raising my kids to just be right? But now it's, you know, I'm actually trying to disciple my kids. I'm trying to raise disciples, which changes the whole approach. When your kids act up and you think to yourself, not how do I discipline them, but how do I disciple them in this moment? You will change from how do I strictly carry out a consequence to how do I actually teach them in this moment? And so, you know, some of these things that I've learned have been very helpful, but I'll say this because I'm a bit giddy and proud of this at the moment. So right now, it's probably the proudest thing that I have. So again, my father didn't have a dad, and so I never got the talk. My dad never talked to me about sex. And as I have focused on fatherhood more and studied the Bible more and looked at things, I've realized that okay, I can't not do that. I have to talk to my kids about sex. And then so I did some research into the talk approach. And anyone who had the talk 10, 20, 30 years ago, it was probably a very uncomfortable, awkward situation where your dad sat way too close to you and said, this is how babies are made and this is where they come from. And, you know, you probably never went back to your dad. You were like, so follow-up question about the sex thing you told me about. Like, I don't know anyone who has that story. So we just did a really bad job talking to our kids about sex. And especially in Christian circles, it was just like, sex is bad, even though everyone who says that was the result of sex. It's just like, at some point, we really have to kind of figure this thing out because we're talking out of both ends of our mouth in a sense. And so I know I did some research. I had some guests on the podcast and I really thought through, how am I going to do this? And I came to the conclusion that one, I'm not going to make it a V talk. I'm going to open up a new channel of conversation to where I can talk about sex and everything that goes into it with the kids, that we can just do this. It's just going to be an open conversation. We're not going to be uncomfortable because God created sex. One of the best things that I heard when I was doing research, I interviewed a couple of my friends who have a pretty successful podcast. And the guy said, I don't think he could remember who had the quote, but he said, there's so many Christians who believe that God created male and female and created them perfectly. And then the devil came and slapped their genitals on. Like that's such a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's really how we've viewed it. And so my whole boys cruise that I just came back from, that's what it was about. It was, we celebrated manhood. My son's 8. He's getting ready to start puberty at some point in the next 2 to 4 years, probably. And it was, you know that you're a boy now, and that's cool, but you're getting ready to become a man. And I want to help you become the man that God wants you to be. And in order to do that, eventually, you're going to not just be a man who does what you want, but you're going to become a husband, and you become one with your wife, and then you're going to become a dad, and you're going to have the opportunity to love and serve and give for these little beautiful blessings that God gives you. And we did some cool things with it. I told him that he was going to pay for his way. So my son, he's 8, he worked and made $500 to go on this cruise. So again, throwing in the stewardship component of manhood. I didn't make it all about sex because I don't think sex ought to be a standalone component of life. It falls under a big umbrella of what I view as discipleship and stewarding your body and honoring God in that way. And so we talked about that. We talked about growing up. We talked about puberty. We got into all the anatomical terms that make everybody uncomfortable, but that's what they're actually called. So that's what we called it. And we talked about it. And along the way, I told him, I said, this is just the way that it is. I was very intentional to say, you can talk to your mom about this too, because guess what? Mom knows that men have these things, and mom's had 4 kids. She knows exactly how babies are born. You could talk to her about all of this. And I think, you know, the conversation went really good. It was very obvious that, you know, I didn't scar him. He was still a kid on the cruise, and we had a lot of fun. And I spaced the conversations out over the 4 days that we were there. But when we got back, this is where I really got proud, because he was with his mom and they were going somewhere. And my wife said, he brought up puberty. He brought up testes. He brought up sperm. And he said something like, I know where babies come from. And she was like, and I was like, well, that's cool. Yeah, that's good. And she was like, and he was totally normal about all of these things. And I was just like, I've done it. I've succeeded. I have normalized sex and sexuality for my kid, to where we can just talk about these things. He's not weird talking about things with his mom. She said something the other day. I wish I could recall what it was, but I laughed really hard when he brought it up. You can always edit this out if you want to. But one of the things is, I told my son after we got done with the conversation, we were getting ready to come home. I said, buddy, mom knows that we did this, and she knows what we're talking about, because mom's not dumb to any of this. I said, but it would be really funny if when you see your mom one-on-one, you say, mom, I got a question about my balls. Can you sit down for a moment? And he did it. And she told me that. And I laughed so hard. You know, what never happened for me growing up, hearing that sex was bad, that you shouldn't do it. When you get married, it's totally fine now, and you got to figure it all out. And so not having any instruction from my parents, not having any instruction from church, learning everything I learned about it through peers and pornography, and having a really messed up concept of sex and sexuality, putting in the work to fix that and to fix myself best that I could, and then to have that conversation with my son, or to start that conversation, because it's not a one and done deal, but to be able to discuss that with him. And then to get on the other side of it, and he's fine. Like, I've witnessed that you can talk about these things with your kids, and your kids can handle it. Your kids are going to be okay. It wasn't just, you know, this goes here and that's done. I didn't make it about that. I made it about his identity. So I'm very proud in how I did this, and I'm very proud in what resulted. More details to come, because I'm going to create a little, at least a digital product book or a book at some point. On working title right now is Talk the Talk. So we'll see what comes of that. That right now is what I'm most proud of, because it took a little bit of bravery. It took a lot of, this wasn't done for me. I've never done this before. I'm not sure how this is going to play out. But the end result, I was very pleased. So right now, this is like all that's on my mind. I'm very happy that this worked out the way that it worked out. And, you know, I'm not so weird talking about it. And even when the conversations come up with my daughters, because that's one of the things I learned, is that fathers don't just talk to their sons about sex. You should normalize it in your home, even with your daughters as well. I'm not so intimidated by it. So it's like I ripped the Band-Aid off in a sense. So right now, I think that is probably my most proud accomplishment as a dad, that I did what was not done for me, that I put in the time and the effort to really structure things in a way that I thought honored God, that I went through with it, and that it worked. Very happy with that right now.
That's exciting. Yeah. Congratulations on that going well, and praise God. That's awesome. Thank you. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Fathering Our Future.
So Fathering Our Future.
We'll wrap up with this.
For sure. Fathering Our Future, predominantly a podcast. I post an episode every single Monday morning at 4 a.m. Not because I'm up with the baby. That's just the time that I schedule things out.
After helping your baby.
Exactly. I wake up at 3, help my baby, and then I post my podcast. No. So that's just when it publishes, just so it's available when everyone starts their week. But outside of that, I do have the weekly episodes, but I also post blogs and then social media content, which is often bite-sized snippets, sometimes just totally random things that aren't even discussed on the podcast. I've written a couple of books. One I give away for free, which you can get on the website, and the other is a devotional. I wrote this devotional called Following Our Father. I go through 30 qualities and attributes of God as our Heavenly Father and talk about how we can adopt those things for our own selves as earthly dads. You can get a copy of that on Amazon. And my whole goal.
Where can people connect with you?
If you go to the website, fatheringourfuture.com, you can get everything there. If you want to connect with me, there's a contact form there, but I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And so that's where you'll actually get the content. I do have a LinkedIn profile, and I at least post the weekly podcast there, but I'm pretty absent on LinkedIn. I get on LinkedIn to support my friends, and I don't really do much else there. So if you want to connect with me and the content, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is a place to go, or you can get everything just by going to the website, fatheringourfuture.com. And that about sums it up.
Hey, Anthony, thanks so much for all your time today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. This was real fun.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatheringourfuture.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.